When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy. I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and someone I'd never even dream of substituting at half-time, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, Windy.
A little look behind the curtain. Three of us have been recording Amazon All or Nothing watch-along bonus episodes for the last 3 hours, so we're quite drained by this point. But we wanted to get together and talk about the Everton match. Why do we do this to ourselves? I don't know. I'm just going to say really quickly that we wanted to announce on this podcast the winner of the Pleaties shirt because we had some really nice reviews and people were good at emailing their reviews to us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. But we haven't had a chance to choose yet, so we'll announce that on the next episode. So all is not lost. Let's just get straight into it, boys. We played Everton, first game of the season. Nathan, you were excited when you saw the lineup announced.
I was feeling genuinely very positive about Spurs for the first time in a long time. We got through the lockdown period. We got results. We found success. Kane looked healthy. Been watching a documentary about my football club. We made a couple of key signings. Not super exciting young players. Not players with an enormous upside, but functional players that were going to fill a gap, that were going to do a job. And make things work, make things tick for our more attacking players. Okay, bam, they're straight into the lineup. All right, okay, maybe it's a little early to be expecting too much of them. You know, Doherty hasn't obviously played a minute of pre-season because he was away with Ireland as soon as we signed him. Players like that are going to take some time. We're going to need a little bit of patience for them, even though they're Premier League experience, even though they're, you know, mid to late peak players. They're going to take a little while to settle in, so don't expect too much from them. But with all of that in mind, I looked at that lineup and I thought, wow, for the first time in a long time, there isn't a gaping issue with that lineup. For the first time in a long time, there isn't like a massive, obvious hole, an issue. That is a good, it's not great. Like, I'd still want to move Harry Winks out for Ndombele. I'd still like to bring Lo Celso in for Lucas. If we can improve on Davies at left back, that'd be great. Okay, but otherwise, it's a strong 11. It's at the very least, it's not a bad 11. I was feeling positive about Spurs.
How about you, Bards?
I was feeling really positive as well. I mean, as Nathan says, I thought we'd sign two Premier League ready players who perhaps would start a bit better than they did, but it just seemed that Everton signed two Premier League ready players who were a little bit more ready than ours. And I think as many times with Tottenham over recent months, it came down to our midfield just was unable to cope with their guys. And yeah, it's a bit like that.
So I agree with Nathan that in some ways it was an exciting lineup despite no Ndombele, no Lo Celso. there were things to get excited about. But equally, I saw Everton's lineup and I thought, oh wow, okay, they've done the same thing. They've thrown in all their new players. They've even managed to bring in James Rodriguez, who no one thought would start this game. Everyone thought he was going to be on the bench at the maximum. And that made me a little nervous, I must admit, when I saw their starting 11. That said, I didn't think the game would go. I mean, I had quite low expectations. I thought it would be a draw. We put out a tweet where we ran a poll. People were overwhelmingly positive and confident going into this game. They thought it was going to be a win. I thought it might be a draw. I thought it'd be a cagey affair, but I didn't think it'd be quite like this. Nathan, talk us through the two approaches as you saw them.
Okay, so again, I have to start with the context of we played very defensive football in post-lockdown last season. We played on the break, but I accepted it. I looked past it for two reasons. One, we were getting results, which, you know, always goes a long way. Will always go a very long way for a lot of fans. And two, there were the circumstances. It was the fact that it was Mourinho, still his first season. It was the fact that there was this sort of mini pre-season mess up. The fact that there were holes in the squad. I said, okay, fine. Mourinho is playing Mourinho football. But the reports when he first arrived was that he was going to do something new. Yeah. Okay, fine. I'll wait until Mourinho's second season before I start to judge him on this type of football we play. And the first 10 minutes of this game, we pushed them high. We pressed them a little bit. We had a bit of the ball. And then we stopped having the ball. We sat all the way deep. We tried to counter and we failed.
Buddy, what did you think of the team shape, the setup, compared to what Everton were trying to do?
I mean, it was very difficult for Højbjerg and Winks. And at some point, both of them looked a little bit lost. I don't think they work as a two. And there seems to be like a common factor here. There's always, I don't think they work as a two. And it's always when Winks is alongside one of them, one of anybody. And I just felt that he looked a little bit lost when they were trying to press. It was too easy for them to get out of it. And there was big old gaps. And I mean, Allen is a great player. He's getting on a bit, but he's a great player. Doucouré is a solid player who's used to Premier League, and we were linked with him 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, I thought it would have been a decent signing. Gomez is a great player, and James is a great player who probably won't do the whole season, but still got a bit of touch, a bit of class about him. And I just thought our setup just allowed the Everton to express all their strength, but never highlighted any of their weakness. The moments we did see a weakness, definitely down that right hand side, where Hammers wasn't tracking and Coleman was having a tough time with Son. But then we just seemed to forget about that route towards goal, and we never saw Son really get at Coleman again. And I just think it was very lethargic, and I hate it when pundits go they're walking, but I just thought Spurs looked tired, Spurs looked underprepared, and perhaps the lockdown that a lot of our players have been through has had a massive toll on our team.
Well, Mourinho was very quick to point out the lack of intensity, the lack of energy, the lack of fitness, but it was more than that. This is not just about how we were slow to stop Everton playing. It's about the lack of ideas when we had the ball as well. There's two elements to it. There's, you know, our defensive structure, how we intend to win the ball back, and then what we do when we do win it back. And neither were very good, and neither gave me much hope that we've developed something new and exciting, as Nathan alluded to. One thing I would say is Mourinho could argue that were it not for a set piece goal, we didn't really concede that many chances. Were it not for Ben Davies just smashing a wrong-footed pass blind across the pitch where Richarlison nips in and steals it, there wasn't a lot from Everton in terms of coming close to breaking us down. They had more chances than we did, sure. But, I mean, he would point to that, I'm sure, and say, you know, this isn't an awful defensive performance. I don't think it was an awful defensive performance. I just think we were terrible when we did have the ball, and that's what concerns me the most.
Yeah, I completely agree that defensively we were fine for the most part, but at some point you have to progress past that. At some point you have to have the onus, and maybe that having no fans there doesn't get the players on, doesn't move. But there was just, I tweeted after the game that it just seemed there was no one trying to take responsibility or trying to create something. There was no one looking to do something. They were literally passing the ball just to remove themselves from the responsibility of having to make a decision for the benefit of Tottenham Tottenham Hotspur, and I'm a positive person, but I'm not going to be positive for the sake of being positive. It was concerning. It looked slightly better when Bergwijn came on, but we have to talk about Dele and the decision to remove Dele, and you know, team crumbled at that point. Removing Dele, who for all his fault is a player who is very smart on the pitch, for Sissoko, who is a player who for all his qualities it isn't very smart on the pitch, it gave the game away.
I completely agree. I think also I agree that it does come down often with Mourinho to individuals who have we got good attacking players, can the good attacking players we've got deliver, whereas there, what I'm looking for, what I'm hoping for, is some kind of system, some kind of possessional shape or structure that will allow us, even if we're not playing particularly well, to create some possessional play that can grind out chances for us, and it just wasn't there. I mean, one thing I could say is that we play with this system where we have a fullback high up on the right hand side and the left back tucks in. That's been our shape for many, many months. Occasionally not, but mostly that's been our shape for many, many months. And Everton were just able to exploit that with ease. They take advantage of the fact that Davis is hanging back. They allow James Rodriguez to drop deep where Davis won't follow him, pick up the ball, cut in on his favoured left foot, and switch pass after pass in behind Doherty where Richarlison can exploit the space. How easy was it for them to do that? Okay, they didn't then go on to create good goal scoring chances, but it just, to me, showed a manager who had identified the weakness in the opposition and then acted on it in a way which allowed them to enact a plan. Not only that, but they had new bodies in midfield. They had three new players in midfield, and they honestly look like they've been playing together for a decade. Though, I mean, I am not the biggest fan of Andre Gomez, but he played a really good game. He was unleashed by Allen, who just fabulous signing, I think, for Everton on that showing. They looked like they played together for a long time, and we didn't. We looked like a team of strangers, a team of individuals, and that's the thing that concerns me most. Nathan, where do we go from here? What's the hope here? What can we look for going forward that will make us think that there's something to cling to?
It is still, you know, the beginning of this season. It is still a crushed pre-season. Mm-hmm. These, you know, two new first team players arriving need time to settle in. There are still, there are still excuses. So, you know, it's worth keeping things together, keeping our toys in the pram, 2 or 3 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks more, waiting for things to gel a little bit with new players, with new ideas, hopefully, and ideally the likes of Lo Celso and Ndombele. I'm genuinely scraping the barrel to say I'm really glad that Ndombele was on the bench and Ndombele came onto the pitch. At least there's that, man. At least there's that. But I mean, I can give it a bit more time, but if it's going to be like that for another month, I can't take it, man.
So we had a question from Jumpin' Joe in the X-Subs text channel on Discord. He says, our midfield was totally overrun today. Do you see that being a problem this season? Obviously, with the Celso back, that'll help, but it just looked hopeless. To compound that, there seemed to be no one trying anything, runs, forward passes, etc., until Ndombele came on. What do you think, Barty? Did Ndombele give you any hope?
He did. He gave the ball. He did one lovely pass, his first one. Then he did two ridiculous passes, gave the ball away. But then you have to point towards he was at least attempting something. But I don't know if I'm going to get excited over someone attempting failure other than actually achieving it. But I think Lo Celso coming back would be a huge help. And I just don't understand. I'm still lost on Soko. He doesn't do anything to help control a match. But had Dele stayed on, I think we might have sneaked the result there. But I think with Lo Celso back, he does change things automatically because he can beat a press, he can pass the ball properly and advance the play. So he's crucial to us at the moment.
So Nathan, I pointed out that Mourinho could point towards it not being that bad a defence, and actually, you know, I kind of want to wind back on that a little, actually, because the fact that I'm accepting that at this point is depressing. You know, we've gone from, we're at peak Pochettino. I accept that Pochettino got he was terrible towards the end, things got really 100%. Bad, but at peak Pochettino, our defensive system was, we don't let the opposition have the ball in the first place, and when they do, we press the shit out of them and win it back quickly. Like, that was the dream, and I kind of want to go back to that. But ignoring that, accepting what we've got in what Mourinho wants to achieve defensively, i.e. stay compact, don't commit too many bodies forward, forward, don't make mistakes, as he's saying in All or Nothing. Match of the Day highlighted that we ranked 12th out of the 12 Premier League teams who've played so far in terms of interceptions, 12th in terms of possession won, and 11th in terms of attempted tackles. Did the lack of defensive actions concern you, Nate?
So apparently we attempted 9 tackles, of which 6 were Højbjerg's.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really worrying. It's the depth that we sat at after sort of the first 10-15 minutes, our speed in closing down. I did sort of suggest, although I definitely wasn't confident, I did suggest that Højbjerg might be the player when we signed him to push forward both in and out of possession. That does mean, at least at the moment, that Winks is still being the number 6, which we don't need to go into too much over, you know, the shortcomings of that defensively and even in possession too. Hopefully, you know, the good version of Ndombele and Højbjerg should function as a midfield. Maybe that's a midfield that asks Ndombele to be deeper than you want it most of the time. I don't think that that is such a catastrophic issue that it would mean that we have to, you know, concede the majority of possession to a Everton side with a brand new midfield for, you know, the majority of a game. There are solutions here within the squad, but it's worrying, man. It's worrying.
I mean, the lack of games that we have coming up is a positive one, because we can forget about this almost immediately, and two, because the minutes are going to force rotation and force Ndombele to see more football, which can only be a good thing. And Højbjerg, I mean, you could have put Peak Law for Mateus in that team and he would have looked bad. I think Højbjerg did okay, so I think there's still something good there. And I think Mourinho turned to Ndombele when it could have been easy to turn to Lamella instead, which is a tried and trusted method. It either speaks to desperation that he now has to kind of go back on everything that he's stood up for about not playing him, or we are really that in much trouble that this is Mourinho's kind of last roll of the dice. And if it doesn't work with Ndombele, then I don't know. I didn't mean for that to take such a dark turn so positively.
just to say one more thing about defensive actions before I promise I will move on. There was a really interesting tweet from THFC_Cash who picked up and pinpointed that Mourinho had said post-match that Lucas was one of the players who, for me, was physically better because he was one of the guys who had a very good preseason. He was one who was showing me he was capable to create and win duels in there, so we decided to change Lucas for that position, i.e. he moved him into the middle, try and put some pressure on Allen at the base of Everton's midfield. Now, alongside that is the actual reality of that, where Lucas attempted 16 ground duels and won 2. And the tweet says, "I don't have anything else left to say. Lucas Moura will never be defeated."
And 0 key passes as well.
0 key passes again. I mean, this is the thing, that he's such an unproductive player in an attacking sense. Such an unproductive player. So
you're a player who takes more risks than anyone.
Absolutely. He's there simply because of his ability to press and run. And if he's not doing that effectively, yet he's staying on the pitch when someone who could genuinely achieve something in Delhi, he might not be brilliant for 90 minutes, but he could genuinely achieve something, gets hooked. That, I didn't like that sub at all.
So there are two caveats here. One is that you can literally do this, and I've done this myself. I've done this to Pochettino. I've done this to, I don't know, Zidane. You pick up something that they have said, which uses sort of statistical language. You go to the stats where it's a direct contradiction. As much as I would always take the opportunity to dig out Mourinho, this is something that is applicable across the board. The second one is that there is a difference, you can say, between capable and doing, right? Even if Lucas created 0 chances, even if Lucas created, won 0 duels, that doesn't mean that he wasn't the only one who demonstrated that he was capable of doing those things. That does speak to a very, very, very sorry state of the team if your most capable player is someone who's done nothing.
Indeed. So I thought it'd be interesting to talk about prediction from a couple of different contexts. So I put a post on the Patreon. We've got a Patreon, by the way. Did I mention that? We've got a Patreon. I put a post on there before the game. In fact, it was on Saturday. And I said that it's really strange that we've not released a pre-season predictions type pod. This seems like it's something that we would do and have done in the past, where we talk about how we see the season going, who we think might do well, where might we end up, what might we achieve. And I hadn't spoken to either of you about it. I still haven't. But I wondered whether perhaps we just naturally not got round to that because none of us wanted to face up to what we're about to experience as Spurs fans. And in my article, I put that I think think we can't finish top four with the current squad because of the schedule, because of the limited depth, and because we're just not that good. But I did caveat that by saying, you know, if we bring in more players before the window, then that could all change. Nathan, any thoughts? Firstly, why haven't we done a prediction? Do you think there's something in that? Do you think you're just anxious? But also, what's your gut feel on where we will finish the season in the league?
I don't think it's because of like our unconscious fears that we didn't record it. I think it's the season started before the season ended and the documentary came out and we've been doing all this other Patreon content as well. So I think it's just a matter of timing. I think if we'd have had a full summer, we'd definitely have got round to that. Because, as I sort of mentioned at the beginning of this episode, with the new signings, with our results, not performances, at the end of last season, I was definitely feeling a lot more positive going into this game. And I would have said, yeah, I think that we can get fourth. I think we might have to scrape fourth to get it, but I think that we can get fourth. And I think that we can challenge for a domestic cup. That's what I would have said. Now, maybe I'm being reactive and being less confident. I think what might be interesting to be different from other podcasts would be to wait three or four more games and then make our predictions.
Okay, yeah. I think we'll know a lot more in a few weeks when it settles down and we get the players back from quarantine and everything else. But I still have hopes for this season. I think Everton over the early couple of months of this season will take points off other top six teams. This is not a good result, but I still have faith that we can find something if Ndombele gets put back in the squad and Lo Celso gets fit.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud @DLindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.